Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Here is our host, Tony Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska.
Welcome to Life Matters. Today, I'm honored to be joined by Allie Beth Stuckey, who is wife, mom of three, and the host of the podcast Relatable, where she analyzes culture, theology, and politics from a Christian conservative perspective. She's the author of You're Not Enough, and That's Okay, as well as the New York Times bestselling book, Toxic Empathy. And we're thrilled that she will be joining us for the Imagine Banquet, one of the nation's largest pro-life banquets. Allie Beth, welcome to Life Matters.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So for those who may not be familiar with your background, can you share a bit about yourself and how you became passionate about the pro-life movement?
Of course. So I started doing what I do, or a version of what I do, back in 2015. I just graduated college. I was leading a Bible study of girls who were freshmen in college. So I was in my first year in the real world. They were their first year of college. And 2015, 2016, everyone remembers that very contentious election. And as I started talking to these girls about the issues at stake, including things like abortion, I found that many of them, despite being Christians, raised in, you know, Christian Southern homes and the Bible Belt, they really didn't have the words to articulate their stance on these things. And in fact, some of them were completely wrong. They were just completely but they lacked the wisdom to know what the Bible has to say about abortion. And these were smart Christian girls. And so I realized that there's really a need. There was a need among especially Christians to kind of navigate these crazy cultural waters in a way that is clear and courageous. And of course, I was only 22. I was figuring that out as well. But I thought, you know, maybe I can try to take young women especially along this journey with me as we're entering into this election season and we're trying to figure out what does the Bible have to say about these issues. And so that's kind of how it started. I started speaking at sorority chapter meetings, just asking them, hey, can I come give a presentation at your chapter meeting and talk about why it's important to vote? I just kind of started there. And then that grew. I started speaking to other groups. I started using social media, writing, blogging. I had been writing for a while, just kind of theology. And then I started trying to apply that to politics. And then that kind of grew over the years. That was 2015. And my audience just on social media really, really increased a lot. And then in 2018 is when I started my podcast. 2020 is when my first book came out. And it's just kind of grown since there. As far as abortion specifically, I've always been pro-life, and we can talk about that more. I won't keep on, you know, rambling here, but that has always been a part, an integral part of what I've talked about to the young people in my audience.
Good. I'm glad that you take the opportunity to speak to young people. I think that's something that I feel like we don't do enough of. We're not talking about it in our homes, and this generation needs to hear it because they are very socially conscious. And so we're not telling them the truth about life. They're picking up their thoughts about life from avenues that are not necessarily life affirming. So
right.
Thank you for what you're doing. Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Was there a defining moment in your life that solidified your stance on abortion, or has this just been a conviction you've always had?
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, I always considered myself pro-life. Back in my day in high school, abortion and politics weren't really things that we talked about very much amongst friends. But there was never a moment where I thought, yeah, maybe abortion is okay, or maybe these other kind of secular progressive ideas are good. I've always had the basic value system that I did. However, I remember this was after I started talking publicly about my political views. I posted something on Facebook about thinking, yeah, you know, that it's okay to be pro-life and have beliefs around all of these different exceptions. I thought that that was just kind of the common sense position. Yes, I'm pro-life, except in the case of XYZ. And I remember someone commented, I have no idea who they are. They were very kind but forthright in their comment. And they said, what is the difference in a baby that is conceived in rape, for example, or not conceived in rape? And what that comment showed to me in that moment was that I was really not thinking about the abortion issue from the perspective of the baby. I really was thinking about it almost in an abstract political sense. And yes, I knew abortion was wrong. I didn't know exactly what it entailed. And I was thinking about it more pragmatically, more, yeah, this is the Republican position versus the Democrat position, and not, but what does the Bible say about life inside the womb? And what is the morally and biblically consistent position? And so that commenter really challenged me to think about abortion from the perspective of the person who is being most affected, which is the baby inside the womb. And really, when people ask me, what do I say to XYZ, this abortion point, I always say the easiest and most simple thing that you can do is bring it back to the baby. But what about the baby? Is there any circumstance that justifies ending the life of an innocent child? And that really was solidified even more in January of 2019 is when Governor Cuomo of New York signed what was the most radical abortion bill into law at the time, and it allowed virtually abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason. And I remember when he signed that bill into law, the chamber erupted in cheers of Planned Parenthood activists, and the city skyline of New York glowed pink. And I just was struck. I remember laying in bed that night. I was about 5 months pregnant with my first child, thinking, wow, there are really people who are celebrating children being murdered. That's literally what we're talking about. And yeah, I think my passion then was just doubled and my conviction was just deepened that much more.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think that's something that, you know, needs to be said, that there is a difference in philosophical or, you know, party lines versus what the Bible says. And
yeah,
I think sometimes we neglect to really think about really what does the Bible say, and does the Bible really help my viewpoint?
Cool.
Good. Thank you. You had the opportunity to testify before Congress in 2019 on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. What was that experience like, and what message were you hoping to convey?
Yes, that was such an honor. A congressman, Republican congressman from Congress asked me to be their witness. They were the minority in the House at that time. So that meant that I was the in this committee, I was the sole pro-life witness, and the other four witnesses were abortion activists, Planned Parenthood employees, and abortionist herself, who was the head of the St. Louis abortion clinic there. And at first, I was extremely intimidated because all of these people are professionals, these politicians, obviously older than me, more experienced than me. And I was going into a kind of lion's den as just a commentator. But what I realized, I was so nervous about that. And I really don't get nervous talking in front of people, but that was a different setting for me. But once I sat down and I started contending, going back and forth with these Democrat politicians, listening to the arguments of the people sitting on my right and left, I realized that the most advanced and sophisticated advocates of abortion do not have a good argument for their case. They don't. The very same silly, fallacious arguments you see supporting abortion on social media, those are the arguments of the politicians that are defending abortion. They ignore the existence of the baby. They ignore our sound arguments. They're not smarter than us. They don't have more sophisticated arguments than we do. And I would just encourage people, like, be confident in the pro-life position, because it is truthful and it's easy to contend for.
And it's even backed by science.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've asked you when you testified, and I think you did a phenomenal job. And
Thank you.
I mean, you may have been the sole pro-life witness, but you were the strongest witness there. So,
well, thank you so much.
What do you say to those who argue that the Born Alive Act is unnecessary, or that infanticide doesn't happen?
Well, right now it is legal for a doctor to ignore the needs of a baby that survives abortion. It's just that they don't count that as infanticide. And there have been nurses, there have been mothers who have testified before Congress that for the mother, that their baby, breathing baby who survived an abortion was thrown into the trash like toxic waste. There was a nurse, Jill Stanak, who testified before Congress several years ago, who said that she found breathing babies in a supply closet at the hospital where she worked that survived abortion because the baby was aborted because he had Down syndrome. So those testimonies alone tell us that it happened. And actually, the Guttmacher Institute, the research arm of Planned Parenthood, even acknowledges that babies survive abortion. And we don't even know all of the numbers on that because states aren't required to report it. So that legislation is necessary.
Well, you know, the fact that people probably won't acknowledge that it happens because they don't want to say infanticide, but what they're doing certainly, it absolutely is.
Yes, absolutely.
How did the response of your testimony shape your approach to discussing abortion in the public sphere? Did it change anything?
I think it made me bolder. Once I felt like, okay, I've been in the lion's den. I've been up against their best players and they're not that impressive. It just made me want to double down.
Yeah. And then there's something about, you know, once you do it once, it's like, oh, that wasn't that bad. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good. I'm glad that you have continued and gotten stronger and bolder. So now you use your platform to speak boldly on cultural issues, including abortion. How have you seen the conversation on life shift in recent years?
You know, for better and for worse, just to be perfectly honest, yes, there are people I know who, for example, maybe they were part of the Make America Healthy Again movement and they'd always been pro-choice. But now that they've kind of like moved over politically, they've started second guessing some of their own opinions about God, about abortion, about other things that I've talked firsthand with these people who are starting to rethink their position on things like abortion. I'm encouraged by that. But I'm not encouraged by where the Republican Party has gone. And I'm someone who, you know, I think the Republican Party is more pro-life, certainly, than the Democrat Party, absolutely. But that doesn't mean that we have to be complacent with where it is. I mean, they took a lot of pro-life language out of the RNC platform. Obviously, Trump, unfortunately, has equivocated, at least verbally, on things like abortion. And so I think that we just have to stand our ground and we have to be the ones over here saying, you know what? I'm not going to compromise. This is the direction that we need to go. I understand needing to win elections and all of that, but I am not going to compromise on when life begins and why it matters. So there's reasons to be positive about the discourse, but there's also reasons to say, hang on, we got to think past just the next election.
Nebraska's largest pro-life event is almost here. We invite you to join us for the 2025 Imagine Banquet, presented by Laura Lee Hunt Bird on Thursday, April 24th, 2025 at 6:30 p.m. at the CHI Health Center in downtown Omaha. And this year, we are honored to welcome Ali Beth Stuckey, renowned author and podcast host, as the keynote speaker. Tickets are just $45 per person, and sponsorship opportunities are available for those who want to make an even greater impact in supporting life-saving work. But hurry, seating is limited. Secure your spot today by visiting firststeptolife.com/imagine. Again, that is firststeptolife.com/imagine.
You know, there are many young people, especially women, who are hesitant to embrace a pro-life stance because of the cultural pressures that they face. How do you encourage them to stand firm in their beliefs?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think of two people in the Bible. I think of Jesus and I think of Stephen. Jesus was described as full of grace and truth in John 1. Stephen was described as full of grace and power. All of us Christians want to be described as that, as full of grace, full of truth. And Jesus healed the sick. He fed the hungry. He did all of the things that humanitarians would say are good. And still, he was crucified and he was mocked and he was derided. When I think of Stephen, who kindly and boldly shared the gospel to people that he loved, he was stoned to death. And so I think sometimes we think if we strike just the right tone and we use just the right persuasive tactics, then the world will love us. Yeah. But Jesus says in Luke 6:26 that he says, "Woe to you when all people speak well of you." woe to you. So we just need to understand that in the Christian life, and being pro-life is part of the Christian life, the persecution and the pushback and the rejection is baked in. It's baked in, and it's something that we have to accept. That doesn't mean that we're happy when people dislike us, and we should try to be as kind and persuasive as we possibly can, but understand that that doesn't guarantee a happy response from people, and that is okay.
Good, good. You know, I know you've had many difficult conversations, but how do you navigate those difficult conversations with people who passionately disagree with you on abortion?
Yeah, I have. And that can be really tough. What I try to do, if I'm really trying to change someone's mind, is to speak their language and to get down to the one thing that I know they would say we agree on. And that is, it is always wrong to kill an innocent person. You'd be hard pressed to find a liberal who believes that it's okay to kill innocent people. In fact, most of them don't even believe that you should be able to issue the death penalty for a convicted murderer. And so if you can get down to that, their true desire to help the vulnerable, then you can kind of parse things out from there. Sometimes they'll do silly things like deny it's a baby or deny it's a person. And you can just start defining terms. Once you can agree on the definition of a human being inside the womb, and then you can get them to say that human beings should have human rights, the most fundamental of which is the right to life, you've kind of put them in a corner. The greatest thing about being pro-life is that all you have to do is tell the truth. In order to be pro-choice, you have to lie, use euphemisms, and ignore reality. That's a much harder position to hold consistently.
That's one of the things we say here at Assure. The truth does not need to be propped up. And so we're not afraid of telling the truth. We're not afraid of speaking truth to the patients that we serve. The truth is the truth.
Yes, absolutely.
And when you tell the truth, you don't have to remember what lie you told.
Exactly.
So you've discussed the importance of storytelling in shaping public opinion. What role do you think personal testimonies and real life stories really play in the pro-life movement?
I think it is super powerful. Every time I go to a pro-life banquet or fundraiser, which I'm just so honored to get to do, and I watch the testimony of someone who chose life for her baby. I mean, I can't tell you how many testimonies I've watched, and I cry every time because I am just reminded that, again, this is not an abstract issue. We're talking about image bearers of God with bodies and souls that are being saved in so many cases. And goodness, I can think about so many moments. I spoke at a pregnancy center banquet in Houston a few years ago, and she had an entire table of moms stand up who were all holding babies. And she announced that all of those babies were here because those women took the abortion reversal pill from clinic. And those, when you see the faces and the fingers and the toes of the babies that have been saved, that makes it real.
Oh, it absolutely does. I would agree with you on that. I think even just sometimes when we have patients that, you know, we've served and they bring their babies back in, it's just a joy to see them because we know what could have been if we hadn't been here.
Yeah.
So, and if they hadn't chosen life. So it is an amazing testimony when you see those babies born.
Absolutely.
You know, the overturning of Roe v. Wade was a historic moment. What do you see as the next steps for the pro-life movement in a post-Roe America?
Yeah, I think that we really have to hold the line. You know, we see politicians who are scared, who don't, they want to equivocate on abortion because they're afraid that it's a losing issue. But really, like if we look at some politicians like Governor DeSantis in Florida, who decided against the protestations of his own donors and a lot of people in the Republican Party to pass the heartbeat bill in Florida, and how he was just so soundly reelected there and supported, we actually see that when you are honest as a Republican politician and you hold the line, it's really not a losing issue. And look, even if it is, that says we have a lot of work to do in persuading, because life should never be a losing issue. And so I think those of us who are on the side of life, we still have a lot of persuading to do in bringing people over to our side. There's a lot of people who do that well. Pregnancy centers do that really well. And so we have to keep up that work and make sure that we are not drifting toward the center.
What misconceptions do people have about the pro-life stance, and how can we better communicate the movement's heart for both mother and child?
Oh, there's a lot. And I think a lot of people who have misconceptions about the pro-life movement are deliberately staying in their misconception because there's a lot of information out there. And so, of course, I think the pro-life movement can always get better and can do more. But I see a lot of my friends and colleagues already doing really good work, really faithfully, and it's going to take hearts of stone turning into hearts of flesh. But I think that showing the reality of abortion, this is something I talk about from time to time very graphically on my show, not with the hope of, you know, like of trying to turn people off. It's actually what I'm trying to do is to show in a very matter-of-fact and scientific way, this is the exact procedure that you are supporting. I just want you to know that it involves dismemberment and the same chemical combination that is used in the execution of death row murderers is used in second trimester babies who are aborted. And a lot of times I'll get that's not true. And really, it's just they don't want to contend with what the reality is. I think pro-lifers actually do an excellent job of defending our position. I think that we can highlight the work of pregnancy centers even more. Some people think work is not being done to help women. And while there is always more work that can be done, the truth is pregnancy centers are doing the very work that pro-choicers say need to be done.
Absolutely. And I think one of the fallacies is that we're just concerned about the baby, and that's just not true. I'm concerned about that mom's life as well. And, you know, often tell people I don't know how anyone who has seen an abortion would say that abortion is okay. They actually look, you know, probably some of the very things that you talk about on your show. If they were to actually take the time to watch an abortion, there's no way they would remain pro-choice or pro-abortion.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, Allie, Beth, you are like really outspoken about your faith. How does your Christian worldview shape your pro-life stance?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the science, we can talk about the philosophy, we can talk about the morality of abortion, and all of that is really important. But at the end of the day, none of that really matters if people are not made in God's image.
Yeah.
If people are not made in God's image, then really we have the right to hurt anyone we want to if they're less powerful than us or if it's convenient to us. And we see exactly what that looks like throughout history, whether it's slavery, whether it's the Holocaust. When we decide that one group of human beings, because of some arbitrary standard, does not have human value and narrate human worth, then we can justify all kinds of atrocities. That's exactly what's happening with abortion. The only reason that any kind of murder or assault is bad is because human beings aren't plants. We're not animals. We are special, and we are special because we have the image of God imprinted upon us, and we are eternal beings. And without that, it's really hard to argue for kind of like pragmatic morality. You can try to do that, and it works. But really, what people don't understand is like inherent in that is the idea that human beings are special. And we only get that because God created us. So that is the underlying belief in the pro-life movement and really any humanitarian movement.
Yeah. So, you know, this is something that I kind of encounter, I'm going to say on a regular basis, but what do you say to Christians who are hesitant to speak out on abortion because they don't want to be seen as too political? They think abortion is a political issue. What do you say to those people?
Yeah, I do run into that kind of thing a lot. And I say, look, it's not that our theology has become political as Christians, it's that politics has become theological. Mm-hmm. And when politics intersects our theology, we have a responsibility to stand up. And when it comes to abortion and some other very fundamental issues, it's an issue that we actually see addressed in the very first chapter of the first book of the Bible. A lot of our so-called culture war questions are addressed in Genesis 1:27. God made us in his image, male and female, he created us. Right there, we get a lot of answers. And one of them is the value of human life. We see that to be human means to be made in God's image. Well, we know that we become human at the moment of conception. We have our own unique human DNA. That means at the moment of conception, at the moment we become human, we are made in the image of God. That means that we have value. And so you can just kind of deduce right there from the first chapter of the Bible that it's wrong. And of course, we see throughout scripture that the murder of innocents is abominable to God and should be something that breaks our hearts. So it's a biblical issue for Christians. And the fact that it intersects politics, well, then that means that we better become political.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Many women in the church have experienced abortion and may struggle with shame. I think the numbers in the church are about the same as outside the church. How can churches foster a culture of grace and healing?
Yes, I think more pastors should be talking about abortion from the pulpit. Both in making sure that their congregants know what it is and that it's wrong, but in the very same sermon, in the next breath, that pastor needs to offer hope and forgiveness and counseling for the woman who has gone through abortion. Most churches have women who have had an abortion. That means that there needs to be counselors who are equipped to talk to them. And so, yes, I think that this should be from the pulpit an invitation that is given.
All right, as we begin to wrap up, if you could tell every young woman in America one thing about the abortion issue, what would it be?
You have control over what happens to your body. You say, my body, my choice. I say, your body, your choice. But the baby inside the womb is not your body. The baby inside the womb is his or her own person, and you do not have a right to end that life. You chose to help create that child, and now you have a responsibility to care for that child. And that child is a human being that has human rights, the most fundamental of which is the right to life. There's a million other things I would say too, but I'd probably start there.
Yeah, good. So Allie Beth, where can people follow your podcast and find your latest content?
Sure. They can follow me on Instagram, Allie B. Stuckey. My podcast is called Relatable, comes out Monday through Thursday afternoon. They can watch it on YouTube, watch it on Spotify, or listen wherever they listen to their podcasts.
Allie Beth, thank you so much for joining me today. We are really looking forward to welcoming you here in Omaha, April 24th. And I'd love to continue this conversation and just to celebrate life with you. So I know our listeners are anxiously waiting for your time here in Omaha as well.
Well, I'm so excited. That'll be my first time to Omaha. So I'm excited about it.
We want to thank you for joining us on Life Matters this week. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bot Radio Network.